Welcome to The Defiant Spirit, a podcast about meaning, purpose, and resilience. I'm Dr. Baruch Halevi, also known as B, and now let's discover your Defiant Spirit. So welcome back to The Defiant Spirit. I'm going to jump right into an important topic. I came up with it, so important, I came up with it 67 seconds ago in my head. However, I've been grappling with it, living it, working through it, and especially counseling men in particular around it for a very long time. And that is loneliness. Loneliness is perhaps the epidemic of our era, of this generation, in ways that it has never been before in human history. It is baffling to me, remarkable. Behind me, if you can't see, you know, just listening, I'm pointing out to a very important visual, my chair, two chairs, in fact, where I sit with men or I do it on the phone too. Again, I say this, you know, I counsel women too, but I see this more pronounced in men, so I'm going to focus on men. It's certainly applicable to human beings. But in those chairs, we talk about loneliness. Now, we talk about it in a thousand different ways, usually not the word lonely, but what is covering up the loneliness? A ton, a shit ton of doing, of busyness, of producing, of accumulating, of becoming, of achieving, and the list goes on of verbs that are always covering up something deeper. As I make my guys do, and they're not used to doing this, let's go underneath, right, the presenting problem or the presenting darkness, and let's go underneath it to really get into the root cause of the problem with their marriage, the problem with their work, the problem with their mental, emotional, physical, spiritual health, and that oftentimes comes back to this word loneliness. Let me root you into this word loneliness, and then we'll come back to how it manifests. So I don't have any notes in front of me. This isn't sort of a methodical treatise on loneliness. We're going to just jump around, and I reserve the right to come back to this like 6,000 times. Somebody told me when I was becoming a rabbi that every rabbi, I guess clergy in general, have about six sermons they give in 6,000 different ways. I reserve the right to make this one of those sermons, one of those conversations, because it is part and parcel of everything a man and people in general are grappling with in this day and age. But to do that, let's go back to the Hebrew Bible, the Torah. So if you remember your creation story, do I believe it happened like this? No. Everything in the Torah is true, and the Bible is true, and some of it actually happened. It's true with a capital T. It's true as in, so is Buddhism and Sufism and, you know, Christian mysticism and all these pathways of spirituality. They're all true. They're just not necessarily factually true. But that doesn't undo the myth. That doesn't undo the message or the teaching. I don't care if things are factually true. What I care about is, I did a podcast on this with Dr. Dan a few podcast episodes ago. Is it good and does it work? To me, that is the litmus test. So many of the myths and the tall tales are not factually true, but they've withstood the test of time because they have truth within them. And certainly is the case with the Garden of Eden. I can think of no greater truth than this one, again, regardless of whether it happened. Excuse me. So, in the story, the creation story, it says that the creator, I hate saying G-O-D because I think that that's sort of been co-opted and rendered meaningless for most of us. There are 72 names for the divine in Kabbalah. None of them are the name. They're expressions, experiences, descriptions of the infinite, whatever you want to call that. I'll call God. So God creates through a process. And in this process, each step of the way, all we know about the process is at the end, it was good. It was good. And God created and it was good. So the question is, what is good? It isn't that it's good as in nice or positive or, you know, you're a good boy, good girl. That's not what the Hebrew word means. The Hebrew word tov, although it does mean that, I mean, modern Hebrew, you know, if you say to somebody, you know, tov mod, very good, that's what it means. However, at a deeper level, at least in the biblical understanding, You can only understand it by what the opposite is. So the first time, the only time, I believe in the entire Torah, but certainly up until this point, the expression not good is used is in after the creation of Adam, of the first human being, of the first man, who, by the way, is named as Tov Ma'od, as very good. So everything's good. Human beings are very good. And again, we'll explain what good is in a second, or I will. I don't know who we are. I will. I'm used to being on this conversation with Dr. Dan. It's a lot easier, by the way, talking to somebody than yourself. At least you feel a little less crazy. Coming back to Adam, the one thing we learn about Adam after the fact, when he's in the garden, working it, guarding it, is that God says, Lo tov heyot Adam levado. It is lo tov. It is, this is your Hebrew lesson for the day, it is lo means not, tov is good. It is not good for Adam, for a person to be levado. Now this word levado is, it's rare. It's almost never used in the Torah. It doesn't mean alone. It's usually translated as it's not good for Adam or for a man to be alone or a person to be alone. That's crazy. It is so good for a person to be alone. I love being alone. Now, I don't have much of that in my life. I'm married. I have 4 children. I have a busy life, community, etc. Thank God for it. I relish my alone time, as do most people. So it's not that it's not good to be alone. It's not good to be levado, lonely. There's never tov, goodness, that comes from loneliness. Being alone, yes. Being lonely is an existential crisis. It's the pathway to lo tov. It's the pathway to not bad, to destruction. So to come back to the beginning, if God is creating, it's creative. Tov is not good, it's creative, it's constructive. That's the word. Each day is a construction. It's a positivity. It leads to the next thing. Construction. There's a connection. All these words are describing that one idea of tov. Well, the opposite of that is destruction. Right, is an undoing of the creative process. So it is lo tov heyot adam levado. It is not good. It is destructive. It is deconstructing for a person to be lonely. You want to watch somebody's world come undone? Put them into isolation. Right? This is the ultimate punishment. In prisons, it's the ultimate punishment. I would argue it's far worse of a punishment than capital punishment. I can't speak from firsthand experience, but I can speak from a theological perspective. I believe there's something beautiful and blissful on the other side. That ain't isolation. You want to punish somebody as they do in prisons or in POW camps, you isolate them. We know this. We went through this as a society, as the human race over these past few years when we went through COVID. The isolation is destructive. This is why it was so detrimental to keep kids from going to school, right? They weren't dying because of COVID. I understand we didn't know that at first. However, what we did know throughout the entirety of the time is that lo tov, it is destructive for a human being, for a child, to be alienated, isolated, and lonely. And we're paying a heavy price for it. I think some of the reason why the world is upside down right now is because we're only now getting to the consequences of that destruction of loneliness and isolation. So coming back to Adam, it's destructive for a human being in particular, human beings in general, a man in particular, to be lonely. What are one of the few things that we see common denominators in most shooters, not all, but most shooters who go into movie theaters or schools or marketplaces and open fire on innocent human beings, invariably they're men. Once in a while, there's a female, but it's like 95% men. Invariably, they're lonely. That's the only common thread. It's not a poverty issue. It's not a economic status type thing. I'm sure there are bits and pieces, but that's not the thread. That's not the thread of suicide bombers. Suicide bombers come from all walks of life, not just the poor. Loneliness. That is how you program suicide bombers. You co-opt them, you brainwash them. It's how you bring anybody into any kind of a cult. When you hear about people who end up in cults, they're lonely, and predators prey upon that loneliness. There's a destructivity. Is that a word? Destructivity? There's a destructive quality to loneliness that is hard to overstate. I see it throughout our society, but I see it especially with men. And those chairs behind me, I talk to men all day, every day. I talk to women too, but I see this as a growing passion and calling for me to connect with men who don't appear lonely on the surface. They tend to be married, not always. They tend to be in, you know, good careers, ascending in their life. Most of the guys I work with are somewhere between 35 and 65, really hovering around that midlife sort of transition period. Their lives are full. I mean, these guys are literally never alone, which I think is part of the challenge. And yet all of them are lonely. They're lonely in their marriages. They're lonely in their professions. Not necessarily all of these things. It just takes one of these things to be a destructive quality in the garden. I'll come back to that. They're lonely in their friendships. They're lonely in their families and their extended families with their parents, oftentimes around their dad, a loneliness, a hunger for a connection that's not there. They're lonely in their society. You know, there are consequences for us disrupting the status quo. For hundreds, thousands of years, men would turn to traditional organizations like fraternal organizations, like the Masons and other variations of that, Rotary, and there's just so many old fraternal organizations that are gone, that are no more, or certainly religious organizations, you know, Judaism in particular, not in particular, I think Christianity and Catholicism certainly very much as well, were dominated by men. Now, I'm glad that women have their place in those systems, at least in the liberal versions of those systems. However, there is a serious consequence. I saw it as a conservative, a liberal rabbi. The men were gone. They disappeared. Not the moment, but over time, they were edged out by women. The synagogue that I was the rabbi, 80% of everything, minimally, was female. Now, you could say that men weren't as spiritually inclined or for a thousand other reasons, but I will argue that there's something that changes when you introduce women into a men's conversation, to a men's organization. Again, I am glad. I want egalitarian. I want equality and opportunity, but that doesn't always mean it has to be the same opportunity. It should be, and many times, in many situations, separate but equal. That's why I'm running men's groups right now. Not that I'm not supportive of women, it's just that when women are involved in a men's group, it's a different kind of a group. It has its time and its place. But when you've disbanded these groups for men, they have nowhere to go. Women, as I've seen a thousand times, have those groups, and they have their friendships, and they have their women's gatherings. I see with Ariella. She has so many female friends and so many groups, organizations that she's a part of that are women either dominated or female exclusive. Wonderful. Great. Men don't naturally have that anymore. The places and spaces they used to go are pretty much either something that doesn't speak to them or just not even in their framework, not on their radar anymore. So where do these guys go? They don't turn to their friends or the people around them as readily as women. I don't care how egalitarian and similar we are, we're wired differently. I talk to men all day who tell me about the deepest, darkest, most struggle-filled places in their hearts that their best friends, quote-unquote best friends, don't know about. Their lifelong childhood friends don't know about it. Their business friends don't know about it. Their golfing buddies don't know about it. Their poker buddies don't know about it. I ask them, who do you tell? Who do you share these lonely feelings with? Nobody. Maybe they share with their spouse. Oftentimes, though, they don't, or they can't, because they don't want to burden their spouse, or their spouse is part of the loneliness factor. Where do these guys go? They don't. That's the point. They don't go anywhere. They don't have anyone. They're not always inclined to seek out a coach or counselor or a therapist or clergy or somebody to confide. I sit in this chair, and part of what I do with these men is I just listen. I just give them my undivided attention. I just give them what Carl Rogers called positive unconditional regard. I just sit there and I hold the space for them to purge, to get it out, to say the thing. To so many women I know, it's almost like, duh, like that's what we do. That's what human beings should do. It is not a duh. It is not a given. It is not an obvious, and it is not a pattern of a man in his life. A man at all ages in life, but especially in the heated, what I call high noon of life, sort of that 30, 40, 50 something time when vulnerability is not looked upon favorably, when opening up and sharing is not encouraged readily, he has to fight against all those extenuating circumstances to get his ass into this chair or some variation or version like this and to get beyond the bullshit, I'm good, I'm fine. Right? We have a saying in my men's group, 10, 10, 10. That's when a guy responds back to how is he doing personally on a scale of 0 to 10, a 10 being obviously perfect. I'm a 10. How are you doing professionally? 10. How are you doing emotionally, spiritually? 10. 10, 10, 10. None of us are 10, 10, 10. Not always, not all at the same time. If you can't open up and be honest about where you're at in life, what you're experiencing, that causes over a period of time a loneliness that is hard to describe unless you've gone through it, unless you're in it. Because when the world around you is appearing like 10, 10, 10, when the Facebook and the Instagram and your buddies, the vacations all look like 10, 10, 10, and you're feeling like 0, 0, 0, you just shut it down and you disappear. Or you puff up and you fake it. You pretend, like my dad. I've shared many stories about him. But he spent so much time saying, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm fine, right? He wasn't fine. He was crumbling, he was collapsing, and in the end, he ultimately killed himself. And for many reasons, not the least of which was that loneliness of 10, 10, 10, that loneliness of not having anyone to share that loneliness with, not having a group of people in general, men in particular, to share it with. And that's destructive. Adam in the garden ultimately loses the garden because of that. Remember that snake? Even when Eve comes along later, loneliness is still there because it was never about human companionship. It was about an inner quality of feeling like one can go and speak the words of truth and open their heart and share who they are, share the truth. And clearly Adam and Eve didn't have that. And so you watch it fall apart, and that's when the snake enters in. I've shared this before, I'll share it again. It's not a walking, talking snake. Nachash in Hebrew means guess or doubt. The doubt entered in, it creeped into the garden. And ultimately doubt is like a weed. It overtakes the garden, it destroys the garden. And that doubt is what happens when we don't express our doubts and our anxieties and our fears, when we don't have a place or a space or a person to confide. Now, by the way, this isn't Eve's fault, and it's not your fault if you're listening and you're in relationship with somebody who's not confiding, particularly a man. Ultimately, these are grown men. I mean, when I'm talking to these guys, half the time I'll say, you know, you're lonely and you don't share this. Have you ever tried? More often than not, they haven't tried, because those guys are friends with other guys who also are saying the same thing, but they tend not to want to put themselves out on a limb, open up, speak that truth, and share. So it's on them. As a grown man, if you're not sharing, you can say it's because you're scared to be rejected. You can say it's because the person across from you doesn't want to hear it. That's not the point. The point is it's on you to open up, to take responsibility and to share. I do understand, though, oftentimes what they'll tell me is, in some ways, it's worse to share something with somebody who can't hear what you're sharing, or worse yet, who rejects what you're sharing. It is something that I've seen in men's groups that men naturally do, and we have to defy our number, defy our nature, and get beyond it. One of the rules in our men's group, Man Uprising, is you're not allowed to tell somebody else what to do. You are allowed to and encouraged to experience share. Share your experience, something that, you know, relates to what that man is sharing. And that invites the opportunity to be open and to share. Because so often what happens is we end up shutting down the person across from us by telling them what to do, or certainly telling them that's bad or they're wrong. And so many men I talk to, frankly, are just surprised that I don't tell them what to do. I certainly don't judge what they're sharing. It's just an invitation to open up and speak the truth. So what does this have to do with loneliness and also coming back to men, women? Because I don't want to get yelled at. I mean, actually, I don't care if I get yelled at, because I'm just speaking the truth as I know it. But I do want clarity. One of the big differences between men and women is that women naturally or more readily share details with other women. I'll do a whole podcast on why women are more detail-oriented than men. I do believe it's biological. I don't think it's just, you know, nurture. But that's not the point. The point is whenever I talk to Ariella about her friend groups, could be high school friends or college friends or current friends, could be work-related friends or, you know, personal, there's always a level of sharing. And I've shared this before. It's amazing. A study was once done on when women go out together. You don't need a study to know this. You've experienced it. On friend dates, you know, go out with another girlfriend. They sit across from each other. They get coffee or they talk, you know, at home. And they just talk about the thing. They talk about whatever's they're feeling, whatever they need to talk about. So men don't do either of those things. They don't sit across from other men. When men are out and about, they hunt, they walk side by side, or they go to a football game and they sit side by side, or they're sitting at a bar side by side, or they're playing golf side by side, or, you know, you name the thing, invariably they're not sitting across looking at each other. Now, even if they are sitting across looking at each other, you know, it's usually playing chess or playing poker. It's not exactly the same thing, because there's always something in between them. And that something is what a teacher of mine, Parker Palmer, calls a third thing. A third thing is a place for a man to put his attention so that he and that other man can have a shared experience. So they'll be talking about the poker. They'll be talking about the football team. They'll be talking about the deer they're hunting. Whatever it is, that becomes a third thing. That becomes a safe space to park their attention and to talk about, so that they can get to, maybe, if they have a chance, something deeper through that process. So many guys I talk to share the experience of growing up and connecting with their dads around baseball or football, you know, watching their team together with their dad. And they, you know, maybe they talk about the stats of that team, or previous past eras of that team, you know, yesteryear. Certainly was true with me and my dad. I mean, we talked a lot about baseball and college football. It was a way for us to connect in an era when certainly men didn't express emotion all that readily. I don't think much has changed. We can pretend it's changed. It hasn't changed that much. Men still need third things. Again, I do believe it's very much wiring. Not only wiring, but partially. So what's the point? This is why it's hard talking to yourself, because I forget the point sometimes. The point is that without doing this stuff consciously, men tend not to go deeper. So they may go out and, you know, do an activity with a guy, and they'll talk about the third thing, but they don't realize that's only a stepping stone to go deeper. So I was talking to a guy not that long ago in this chair behind me who's battling some illness right now. And I said, so what do your friends think about this? And he said, they don't know. I'm like, you just like spent a weekend with them. I don't know what they were doing, skiing, I think. Another third thing. And I said, didn't you, like, you had like hours on the chairlift and skiing and sitting by the fire afterwards talking. You didn't talk about this thing that's at the center of your life? He said, no, it like didn't really dawn on me that that's where we would want to go. That's the point. Women don't need that encouragement so readily. They naturally move towards that place of connecting without a third thing, to go to speak to that pain point, that experience, the feeling that they're having. Men don't, but they can, and they should, and they need to. And that's why we need things like men's groups, or to connect with a counselor or a coach, because we need to be given permission that, A, we can sit across from each other face to face and just share without a third thing. But if we do have a third thing, that we use it as a jumping off point. I've been creating a lot of tools in my tool shed online. If you'd like to get access to it, I'm happy to get you there. I have maybe 50 videos right now, 5 minute videos, 50 different tools. They're third things. Because if we do use third things, let's use them as a means, not an end. Or I do this a lot with poems. To me, a poem is a beautiful third thing. I'll take the poem Invictus and I'll share it with a guy and we'll talk about it from his perspective. If you don't know Invictus, just Google it. Amazing poem by William Henley from the 1800s. And we'll use that as a reference point or a talking point. Or I just did a tool about a friend of mine named Chuck and a client of mine named Chuck. And it's called Chuck's Checklist. And he comes in every session with a checklist of like usually 5 chapter headings, if you will. And just he shares with me the chapter headings that he's been collecting all week long. And those are a jumping off point for our conversations. And we'll use those as a third thing, but we're consciously using them to go deeper into the text, the subtext, and beneath that. And it's a profound, powerful way. Coming full circle back to loneliness. It is destructive to be lonely. We have to understand that we live in a world for people in general, men in particular, where we've never been more connected and yet disconnected. Flip on a switch and you have the world at your disposal on the internet, but yet we're saying very little. And this is true with both genders. We're saying very little. We're certainly connecting less than ever before. And for men to go out into the world, we need human connection. We need real life connection. We need connection with people. We need connection with men. We need connection with men who are ready to stop saying the bullshit 10, 10, 10 and start saying the truth, whatever that truth is, to create space for men to be able to go into that space. As I call it, not safe space, but brave space. I think I got that from Brené Brown. Brave space where you can say the thing and not have it judged and simply have it held with unconditional positive regard by people, by men who support you, who've got you, and will just hold that space for you to navigate through. And just that act alone is an antidote to loneliness. It is magical. Just showing up is enough. I'll do a whole podcast on why that usually doesn't seem like enough for men, because it's oftentimes not a fix, and men like to fix, they like outcomes. But to hold that space, to sit in that space, to be present in that space for another person, for another man, is the greatest gift you can give to another human being. To bear witness to somebody. Not just the 10, 10, 10 something on somebody, but to bear witness to the 0, 0, 0. To not shrink back, to not run away, to not, you know, look upon them with disgust, but to hold that space so they can continue to be brave. That is the greatest gift you can ever give another human being. And that's, you know, one way to deal with loneliness. I'm going to deal with it 5,999 more times, but that's my riff for the day. And I will talk to you in the next podcast. Until then, you know what to do. Defy your number, defy your loneliness, get out there and live your tov, live your constructive, good spirit out in the world. I'll see you in the next video. Thank you for listening to the Defiant Spirit Podcast with me, your host, Dr. Baruch Halevi. If you like what you heard, please consider leaving a 5-star review and share this podcast with others. To learn more about the Defiant Spirit, get more inspirational content, or see how we might work together to live your Defiant Spirit, visit defiantspirit.org. Until then, take back your power and live your Defiant Spirit.